This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Do you say and do things when drinking that you regret the next day? Is alcohol a problem for you or someone you really care about? Over the next hour, we'll find out how people just like you and me found sobriety in AA through sharing their experience, strength and hope. Welcome to AA Live, brought to you by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Kia ora te whanau. Welcome to the AA Live radio show. Tonight we have got a couple of great people here in the studio. I am very much looking forward to tonight. Welcome Simon. Welcome Sue. Hello. I better turn on their mics, then people might want to hear them.
How's that?
That's so much better.
Fabulous.
Oh, wonderful. And they can hear themselves, so they're feeling a little bit uncomfortable, but that's okay. We are going to discuss our journeys a little bit tonight with drugs and alcohol, and hoping to get a bit of insight from you, Simon, regarding sponsorship.
Yep, sure.
Lovely. So to all our lovely listeners out there around the Motu and in the world, stick around and listen tonight because it's going to be fun. Now, a little bit of serious stuff. This show, we explore the ideas behind a way of recovery with alcoholism. God, I'm one of those and I can't even say it. There's something wrong with that. Okay, and I have not been drinking. Alcoholism through the Alcoholics Anonymous program, which I am incredibly grateful to have found. Now, we're going to start with the preamble. Sue, could you read us the preamble, please?
Absolutely. Here we go. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
Thank you. Thanks. Now, folks, while you're listening to that, you're hearing a little bit about how Alcoholics Anonymous program works inside the rooms. But also, I just want to offer you to let you know tonight that the opinions you hear this evening, they're just ours. They're not necessarily that of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. So we're just three alcoholics getting together to have a chat. We're also going to read the Daily Reflection. And I have asked Simon to do that one, please. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Okay, June 25, a two-way street. If we ask, God will certainly forgive our derelictions, but in no case does he render us white as snow and keep us that way without our cooperation, and that's from the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, page 65. When I prayed, I used to omit a lot of things for which I needed to be forgiven. I thought that if I didn't mention these things to God, he would never know about them. I did not know that if I had just forgiven myself for some of my past deeds, God would forgive me also. I was also taught to prepare for the journey through life, never realising until I came to AA, when I honestly became willing to be taught forgiveness and forgiving, that life itself is the journey. The journey of life is a very happy one, as long as I am willing to accept change and responsibility.
Heavy words. What's your thoughts on that, Simon?
Well, first off, I know that when I first came to AA, I was from a non-religious background, and so words like God and higher power
freaked you out
a little bit. But I'd come to that point where I wasn't going to let that put me off either.
Yeah, I was a bit the same. I was so desperate that they could sprout that word out as much as they liked. It wasn't going to make a difference.
Another thing that stands out to me is forgiveness and forgiving, which has always been, not easy for me, and I assume other people. And what springs to mind is when I went through the 12 steps that first time with my original sponsor, a guy called Brian, sharing all of myself with him as honestly as I could at that time. And I did dig pretty deep. And to feel no sense of judgment or condemnation
anything like that. He was openly frank and honest about himself, and I thought, Jesus, here's someone who's just like me. Yeah, other than the drinking.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I actually had a chat with my son the other day saying, hey, do you have one of those brains that say somebody's mentioned something to you and then your brain goes tick, tick, tick and away and blah, blah? And he looked at me with a blank face. He said, no. I said, oh, okay, that's just me. And my instant thought was, oh, phew, he's not going to be one of us. If his brain isn't going off like mine is. I mean, he mentioned something and I instantly went,
yeah, I mean, for me, from that reading,
yeah.
Sure, I identify with what Simon just said about the religious aspect. But like you, Jan, you know, I sort of hit the crossroads. And I think for me, I'd taken almost sort of 8 or 9 years of like trying to reduce my alcohol, trying to give up. And at times I had really good bouts of that, you know, it really cracked into it. And I worked with the CADS program or on the CADS program up in West Auckland. And I mean, that's just remarkable. It's such a great scheme and all sorts of levels. But when I sort of moved sort of cities, I just couldn't control it. And the stresses and anxiety in life were just sort of too overpowering. But coming into AA, was that big word honesty. You know, they sort of slam it around a bit, called rigorous honesty. And even, you know, that's just such a, for some of us, definitely for me, not that I was I'm not talking about sort of lying and lying, but getting honest with yourself about who you are, sort of what have you been covering up, on a kind of deeply personal level. As you go through the program, I guess, and have all these new connections with the people. I just call them the people. But
they are the people.
Yeah. Seriously. But it is a really, and it can be quite simple, like even in your workspace or with your friends or anything, like even just telling the truth straight away about anything. But that's just being honest in that department. But then you have to sort of, when you come back into your own sort of life, you have to sort of really fess up to quite a lot of stuff.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that goes down to that forgiveness, not just for us, but for other people. And I don't know, I walked around with quite heavy shoulders with the things I hadn't forgiven myself for that I carried as a burden, just thinking, you know, I was useless. So I think that forgiving yourself is huge. And, you know, I think the heading was a two-way street. Definitely. Mm-hmm. You forgive other people, but you have to forgive yourself too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's quite freaky. But, yeah, you were just talking about that honesty thing. I find that the people in the rooms give me an honesty that I don't find anywhere else. I go out into work and out into the public forum and I'll be quite upfront about something and people will be quite surprised. Do you guys find that as well now that you're in the programs? Or program?
I do find that. I haven't had the experience of standing up in front of a room full of non-AA people and identifying as an alcoholic. I understand that's happened and it would be quite easy to do. But, yeah, I've certainly found my voice. And also, yeah, mentioning honesty, learning sort of when and how to be honest. I think it says somewhere in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it's not the it's not the matter of giving that's in question, but when and how to. And people have talked about brutal honesty and being quite hurtful. So it's learning those sort of boundaries.
Yeah, when not to shoot straight from the hip.
Mm. Yeah.
The right time, right place.
Yes.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And so for you, Sue, just going back to you, you've said you came into the rooms, you were feeling that battle, just trying to live without wanting to drink. Are you finding yourself a bit more peaceful now in your life's journey?
That would be an affirmative. yeah, because I'm a novice, really, at this program. Well, kind of novice. I am almost, can I say this?
Yeah, you can say whatever you like.
I am almost a full year in total, or sort of continuous, as they say, sobriety. And that comes up in another week, and I'm pretty excited about that, actually, isn't it?
Oh, well, look, we would normally clap at this point. Yeah. But we'll wait till we get there.
But that aside, I would have been a continuous drinker for almost, 40 years, you know, and in the end, and liked a little tipple after work and every day and all that type of thing. And it's sure to accelerate, and in your 20s and 30s, it would be a different thing. And then it settled down in my 40s. But then for all sorts of reasons, I'm still finding those out, picking them apart, really. But it just accelerated, you know, and it was really quite frightening what was happening. I was doing all sorts of weird behaviours in workplaces, sort of disguising things, you know, and really, like, now that you've sort of got to know me, but it's more like I was not a recluse, but because my access to alcohol was my priority in the day, it became that. Then everything else was orientated around that.
I was the same.
And if that was almost like 300 and something days ago, you know, for that shift over, it's quite a different experience each day. But I think in the end, I was so sick of what was happening, you know, and I was so just over it and disappointed in everything. And I'd been in the AA rooms maybe a couple of years before for a couple of sessions, and I'm like, oh, I'm not sure about this, you know, what's going on here? They're all pack of crazies. Or they weren't pack of crazies, but I guess I wasn't ready to release, you know, I wasn't ready to stop. I thought, I can stop by myself. I can do this. You know, I can do these other things in my life. I can hold down a job. I can, you know, do all these relatively productive things. But in the end, I couldn't. And I really hit the ground running with AA. I just thought, if I'm going to do this, then I need to be receptive and listen to what people are saying to me.
I was the same. Yeah. It was an age thing for me too. I was 49. So it was, I've got to get a hold of this. Otherwise, the loneliness and all of that, and drinking on your own and becoming a recluse. But you were a lot younger, weren't you, Simon?
Yeah, I came in my mid-20s after about 11 years regular drinking. I had started prior to that, but from the age of 14, having friends who were older and that, it became it was something that I did. And people were telling me then that I had a problem. My first experience of Alcoholics Anonymous was being made to go after having been sent to treatment. And I share this every time. I identified from my first meeting. In fact, I was thinking about it today because I knew I'd be on this show, but the first time I opened my mouth and gave it a nudge at sharing, people were coming up to me afterwards going, have you been here before? So it was in there. But I was 8 weeks in the Bridge in Wellington. That was in mid-1996, and within hours of getting out of there, I was straight back into it. It took another 2 years to come back. But at that point, and I want to go back to the God thing, I had the gift of desperation.
Yes.
And having a sponsor and
that's
being
G-O-D.
G-O-D. Having a sponsor and being taken through the steps via the Big Book, that was good orderly direction. And
yeah, that is the thing. I mean, that's what people said to me at the beginning too. G-O-D doesn't have to be God. It was a group of drunks with good orderly direction for me for a while. Mm. Yeah, you can, while you're feeling a little bit about it, you know, a little out of sorts, but I think at the end of the day, for myself, it was higher power that came into place, rather than that word God. I removed that and ran with higher power. And as my sobriety has progressed and I've grown within my sobriety and so forth, then yeah, it's progressed from there. But it wasn't something that I felt. It's funny, isn't it? We all come in and you think, but actually that word doesn't have to be important at all at the beginning. It's really about just turning up and understanding the disease that you have. Mm. It's not saying you must get into the world of God.
And yeah.
Nothing yeah. actually says that in writing. There is no words at all that say that.
And also from my experiences, the different meetings you go to, and sometimes there's like 8 people and sometimes there's 26 and those types of things. But everyone, like it, the way people identify with that process or their higher power or how they're deciphering what's ahead of them or what they're experiencing, I mean, that's what's stimulating for me too. Capturing or understanding other people's experiences. It's just so vast, you know. So even everyone's perception, if you want to talk about a higher power, I'm sure there'll be probably a couple of, you know,
oh, all three of us would have something different.
So that's compelling in a way as well, but definitely, as I was saying before, because I'm still got my trainer wheels on a little bit until I get to year one, but this keeps going, hopefully. But
it never stops. So
yeah, absolutely.
You're going to be an alcoholic for life, my friend.
Oh, that is for certain. Yeah, I'm kind of. I had known that. I knew that before I came into the rooms. You know, I went from I'm a heavy drinker. I moderate, or I just drink every now and then. And in my 20s and 30s, I loved going dancing, you know, like I was in a good 90s club scene, and that was full of all sorts of other tricks and treats as well. So
it's
that sort of passion for hedonism as well. That's a big part of sort of where I was heading. I'd sort of work hard, play hard. And but after a little while, you know, you can't maintain that, really.
No.
They unravel.
Well, they unravel and people disappear because they're not continuing with that lifestyle. And then all of a sudden you can be somewhere and you think, gosh, I'm the oldest one here. How did that happen? that's kind of noticeable at times too. But, right, hey, you are listening to the AA Live radio show in association with our friends from Otago Access Radio. They are on 105.4 FM. Now, we have got some music today. Simon has brought us in a song, a couple of CDs. We've got a band called The Exploited, and this song is called, I Believe in Anarchy.
I believe in anarchy. Let's see your pogo. Go! I'm ashamed, fear the fun, and I don't care. I don't give a damn, and I don't care what you say.
Okay, what did you think? Were you banging your heads? Were you having a go? Turns out, while we were chatting while that was on, this was the beginning of Simon's journey into having a bit of fun with alcohol. Would that be right?
Yeah, yeah. It sort of coincided my drinking and, you know, and smoking a bit of weed, and then the music and the style, and then it was late 80s, so it wasn't hard to find and click with other guys who were, it was mostly guys, who were into the same thing. And that set the scene for the next, you know, 10, 11 odd years. And we're talking about the being in a group of people and being the oldest one there. I remember getting into that scene and there were guys who were easily 10 years older, and yet it didn't seem to make any great difference. In fact, you know, I look to them as my role models and examples, and it didn't play out well. I'll just probably say that.
Well, 10 years isn't much, but it's when we get to 20 plus years and it starts standing out. Do you think? Maybe.
Well, like attracts like.
Well, this is true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so your journey started quite young, you were just saying. It took you 11 years to get into a position where you felt, I need to do something about this. Was that family driven or was that your own willingness to do that? Oh, no, sorry, you did say actually you were court driven to walk into.
That was at 23. I trashed a government building one night. We were living next door up in Wellington, the top of Cuba Street. It was the MAT. And
oh my gosh, I know that building.
and they said, well, you know, you're probably going to get jail for this, and which was actually the plan, because I was going to be in good with my mates and get a bit of street cred, you know. And it didn't go that way. I had a lawyer, Sandy Bajan, I believe she's still practicing, and she said, no, I don't think you belong up there with all those other naughty boys. She says, you know, you've got an alcohol dependency. There's also a psychiatric component here. That had come into it by that point. And so she said, I'm going to recommend a treatment program. And, I got into the Salvation Army Bridge. It was in Newtown at that time on John Street, I think, residential. And
I believe it still is in Newtown.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. And, it was kind of, oh, sweet, you know, this is easy. She seemed really pleased and thought, oh, this is going to be a really good thing. And I'm like, oh, whatever. Just don't get locked up.
It's that willingness, though, isn't it? Because you can see even in the rooms when people come in, they're just dabbing their toe in the water. And then there's people who are at that point of desperation and really wanting to make something happen. It was a bit like what you were saying, so.
For sure. And and you also, broadly speaking, people really want to come into those rooms and they do want to stay. And it's, for reasons out of their control, they can't sometimes, and it takes a couple of goes to sort of try again or, so you can see that too. And that's, again, I don't know if it's a selfish thing to say, but that's quite motivating as well on a personal level, in a sense of like, God, you know, this is so risky. You know, I have to keep really trying and being focused on this. And there's a sort of, the opening AA thing, the primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. And without, so, you know, repeating things too much, but it's like, I have really put that in front of what I'm doing. It comes because I really want to do this and to have this sober life. Then I put that in front of everything. It's ahead of work. It's ahead of, and I sort of aim for that. And it sounds sort of like, whoa, what's going on about? But I think, yeah, I just made if I put that much effort into my other things in my life. And especially if I put so much effort into drinking, right, then surely I can give this a try.
Well, that's what they say too, isn't it? I was the same as you. When people would come in and leave and not stick around, that was my motivation. I think it's that circle of alcoholics helping other alcoholics. It made me go, oh, I can't go out again. It scared me. So I would make sure I'd put the proper work in. Did you find that, Simon?
I did. So I came in there. I was sent to the treatment at 23, came in at 25, and at that point I had no one else urging me. I was referred to a psychologist, and he knew what he was dealing with straight away, and he said he would support me in a spiritual way of life. I'd never heard anyone from that profession talk like that before, and he mentioned AA, and I said, I've already tried that, it didn't work. I hung on and hung in there because I was so scared of what would happen if I didn't. I could not guarantee what would happen when I drank. It was just, physically I was spent, I mean, you know, and so meetings was the first port of call, but then I found just going to meetings and not drinking wasn't a flash place to be. Yeah, and so I can be grateful for that too, because that motivated me to actually find out what a sponsor was and to ask another man to take me through the steps. And once I started, I had to give it my best shot, because I did not want to. I admitted I was an alcoholic. Acceptance took a bit longer, and I thought, this is going to kill me, and it's not going to be a nice, peaceful death when I'm an old man. It's going to be a grotty, something bad. You know, I was lucky it hadn't happened already. And I was absolutely terrified of step nine.
Everybody's terrified of step nine.
Thanks. It's good to be reminded of that.
Yeah.
And I persevered, and I'm so glad I did, because it was at that point that I started to notice the change. Other people had noticed it well before, but it was like, well, this is actually happening. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's quite an amazing program when you do start doing the work, isn't it? Mm.
And yeah. With your experience, Simon, like, you sponsor several people, I would imagine.
Oh, or
have I jumped through the hoops?
You
too
jumped
fast?
In a hoop and you swam. Stop it. No, I'm kidding.
Sorry, I was just trying to.
It's okay. Yeah. Hey, you are listening to the AA Live Show in association with our friends from Otago Access Radio. It is lovely to have you out there this evening on 105.4 FM. I'm going to put another one of Simon's choices on right now, and this is from the Sleaford Mods. And I love the name of this song, Tarantula Deadly Cargo. Bring it on.
It's been it's true. V for Wolves Vendetta. Freeze it, you can still eat it later. Straight away, just one cornetto, mate. I said, well, alien mum, dropping lethal cargo on the ship. Tarantula, deadly cargo, it's bent it. Alien dad, dropping lethal cargo on the ship.
Jesus, he keeps throwing me. I was looking and looking, and then we were chatting again, as always, right, we do. I wanted to talk about sponsorship. Thank you, Sue. You mentioned it just before. While we were listening to that, we were talking a little bit about it and how we've all had different experiences. Some sponsor, some don't. And I was mentioning to Simon how when, through my early part, I was always in awe of how he talked about sponsorship and looking after his sponsees and taking on board anything I thought would be a little nugget for later on in my journey. And I still use a couple of things, and I'm very aware of his big book. Now, his big book is pretty tattered, has a lot of lines in it and draw a writing on it and little words here and there, and there's, yeah, he takes his sponsorship very seriously, and I I'm in a little bit of awe of that, and I think that you do a wonderful job, Simon. I'm wondering if you could, because we talk about sponsorship on the show a lot, but we don't really explain it, and we say, you know, you've got to go through your steps with your sponsor, and you should make sure you talk to your sponsor about things and so forth. And that, to our listeners, could just be a word. And I'm sort of wondering if you could, I don't know, give us the top five things you think are really relevant when it comes to sponsorship and how you go about it. I mean, yeah, can you throw us a few fish hooks?
Well, I'm just thinking back to that first sponsor. So I phoned this guy up and I asked him, what does a sponsor do? And he said, well, it takes you through the steps. And I said, well, how long does that take? And he said, 3 to 6 months, so a step a week in his case. Other people do it differently, but that was... And he asked if I had a big book, the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and the 12 Steps and 12 Traditions, and I had both of those. In fact, him and another guy gave me my first big book, so I had that. And he said, come out to my place at 2 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, and we'll start from there. So we began right at the very beginning, you know, the foreword, preface, da-da-da, and worked our way through. And then Chapter 3 was concurrent with Step 1, more about alcoholism. Chapter 4, we're agnostic, Step 2. And then Chapter 5, how it works. And that was Step 3, Step 4. And so I remember kneeling at Step 3 and saying the Step 3 prayer on page 63 of the third edition. And I was instructed to do that every day, on my knees. Regardless of what I thought, I was willing, desperate enough to do that. And then Step 4, I was given a week to do it, and he gave me a template. And this was in the days before the internet, so these are readily available. You print them off. And so fears, resentments, sexual conduct, harms and wrongs done others. And amongst all that, it wasn't just what I did, but what part of self or what defect of character was underlying those things. Selfish, self-seeking and frightened, dishonest, inconsiderate, other things maybe. And I shared that with him in Step 5, Chapter 6, Into Action. And so we just went through that whole process. Now, I fell into a habit over that time of I went to a meeting every day. he was big on service, and in my later sobriety, people said to me, you were very lucky with that sponsor because he got you involved in service. And that was at the group level. I was treasurer, that was my first role, then door opener or secretary, and eventually GSR, going to the area assemblies, not knowing what the hell was going on, but that's what I was told to do, and that's what I did. And he impressed on me, when you get well and start passing this on to other guys, remember you're doing it for you. Yeah. It took 3 years. I didn't feel ready. And I was right to have listened to that. I just thought, this is, but I went to meetings, I did what I could otherwise. If there was someone who needed to get to a meeting, it might be a guy down at the night shelter or the Salvation Army men's house before they knocked it down. This is up in Nelson. I didn't have a car, so we'd walk to meetings together. And that was part of that whole service and passing it on. And I got to 3 years and I took on three newcomers. I'm probably not getting too much into it, but they were very challenging individuals, as we can be, but in particular. And we've only got so much time, but it wasn't good for me. And at one point, one of the old timers in our fellowship up there just quietly said, Simon, is that the way you were sponsored? And I said, no. And he said, well, there you go. He even stood quietly in the background as I just gently told one of these guys, look, I can't keep doing this. And it was fine. And it took another 2 years before I felt ready to do that again. And ever since that point, I've generally been sponsoring someone. I've always had a sponsor. And I seem to have a knack of choosing guys who don't hang around. They move or they, they don't. As far as I know, they're all still sober. But what that meant was that I got the input of all these different sobrieties and different personalities and ways of doing things.
And I could imagine that one of the things I've found, I have had two sponsors and they've both done it quite differently. Do you find that you've pulled on what was good for you and worked really well for you and utilised that and left away some, crumbs at the side, or you're quite rigid?
People tend to sponsor the way they were sponsored. Initially, it was one size fits all. This is the way, and I was told I was a hard 12-stepper. It was just boom, And as time's gone on, I've softened, I've refined my approach, and what works for one guy or one person, may not for someone else. And it's like, okay, well, what's the best approach here? How do I do this? But the fundamentals are pretty much, the book as it's written, my experience. Of working those steps, service work, and that first sponsor, winners travel. So when the opportunity comes up to head out of town to, it might be a service function or in a convention, see who else is around and say, come on, go and do this. That's something that I have found really important too, going along to an area assembly business meeting and actually being with my sponsee, and he can ask me questions
See, now there's another little nugget. And for you, Sue, you've got a sponsor now.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right.
Yeah.
And are you finding that's making your journey, I wouldn't say easier, but more directed for you rather than feeling floating out there on the ethers?
Yeah, I agree with that. As I was saying, almost a year ago when I walked into the rooms, when you complete a meeting, they go, people put up their hand if there's an available sort of sponsor, and they said you can get a temporary sponsor. So I sort of thought, right, I better do this. This is day one. And that was good in terms of just, okay, I've latched onto that. I've got that. I don't know what it means. I'm not sure what's going to happen. Do I call them every day? Do I sort of press ups on the ground? I don't know. But luckily enough, also in that same meeting, I bumped into a friend of mine that I hadn't seen for almost an acquaintance, actually, maybe for 20 years, and he'd come back from New York, and I walked in, and I thought, I know that guy, I know this guy. And it turned out to be, and now we've become thick as thieves in this program in Otago. And I think that really helped me. It's like, and I know I've helped that person in terms of this everyday connecting. And we're both sort of independent and, I guess, single, not single. I don't know who cares about if you're single together. But we're sort of locked into each other in a way and being really supportive and then like sounding boards. And he was active with his sponsor. And so gradually as I worked, I was thinking, God, I need to actually, you know, how do I find the sponsor maybe that will be that fit? And I sort of went to quite a few meetings and I started to hear some things about some of the people who had that time up. And that was advice as well, like, see what how is those people sharing back to you, or what's their sort of sensibility like? It doesn't have to match yours at all. But it was just like, do you think that could be something? And then I went and asked that person, and they were so gracious and said yes, and that was good. But in between that time, I did actually go and see another sponsor who's very experienced in the rooms, and a bit like Simon, knows the book back to back, and it was fantastic. And I'd do some study with him, maybe a couple of hours, once 4 hours or something, or 3 or 4 hours on like step 3 and 4, because I just couldn't understand what that meant. You know, I needed explanation. So that was incredibly helpful in doing that. And then with the sponsor I have at the moment, yeah, we're working out that relationship, and it's really good. And she was really quite firm, even though she's an incredibly kind person. And she said, there's a few conditions. You know, she was like a contract. I had to almost sign up. She's like, you have to be stepping and you have to be going to meetings. Like, she's not mucking around. You know, so that was that sort of heavy, even more of an investment that I needed to make into that relationship. So, yeah.
So
that's how it works for me anyway.
Listening to you both, that tells me that my summation of listening to you both is a sponsor is worth its weight in gold, because they will be able to explain those things to you. They will hold your hand as such and get you through those steps. And the support is necessary, do you think? Because I came in and I listened to people like yourself and went, oh, I must get into that and do service. And I found it really hard to find a sponsor at the beginning.
Right.
And I ended up going with somebody who does most of her meetings overseas online, because she's from overseas. And you don't see her very often in the rooms, but someone had said to me, try this person. And it was great. She was wonderful. But we were both so busy with our children that I had to end up going to someone else who I saw in the rooms. But, yeah, I tried to do everything right, but I never got a sponsor until a year probably it took me.
Like treading water, is it a little bit maybe?
Very much so, yeah. But I just threw myself into service. But I also had COVID come and lockdown come 3 months into my journey. And so I was locked at home. We couldn't go to meetings. But I really wanted them, so I helped get Zoom meetings up and going. And that, I think, was a lifesaver for me, because I would have picked up, I think, probably, you know, just that.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm at home. Nobody could see what I'm doing. That devious.
And I think what's the great thing about a sponsor, and that's what I'm just learning, and every, you know, just working out this whole currency or strategy of how it all plays out. But it's not just about, you know, we don't sit there and talk about alcohol. You know, it's that you're not talking even sometimes about sobriety. It's actually talking about how do you negotiate what's happening maybe for that day or something that's come through. And how to sort that process out. So, life coach?
It is. It's how to live life.
Yeah, how to live life.
On life's terms.
Yeah.
That's the saying in the rooms. But, yeah, because, well, we're not. We're not. We're living life on our own terms. Thank you very much. Like your first song said, bloody anarchy. Here we go. I'm going to do what I want. And that's what we did. So, yeah, it is. It's like a life coach.
But I understand. And that's that the sponsor, you two, there's a reciprocation, right? So it's not sort of a one-way street.
is hugely returned the other way. Absolutely. Yeah, you don't just get reminded of what you should be doing. You get reminded of the meaning of the steps. You do them again. I mean, I remember you saying, Simon, you were doing yours quite often, depending on your sponsees, weren't you? I remember some one time you sharing of, oh, I'm going through the steps again at the moment.
Oh, that probably relates to when I first moved down to Dunedin. So that's 5.5 years ago now, maybe. And my sponsor I had at that time was on the West Coast, and he said, I'm quite happy to keep doing that, but I think you'd be better off to find someone in Dunedin. And I said, I've got someone in mind. He said, ask him and then come back to me and let me know how you get on. So I asked this fella and he said yes. So I always expect people to go, no, but he didn't. And so we started through the steps. Now, as I'd moved to a new town, I always remember hearing, get involved. So I went to Intergroup and a few of the guys hung around afterwards and they said, let's have a steps workshop. And I said, yes. So I was going through the steps with them and also with the new sponsor. So it was like, it was kind of in tandem. It was like,
Oh, that's kind of intense.
And then as that was happening, I remember because I wrote a letter to the mainstay.
Did you?
Sharing about where I was at and what was going on. Because I didn't do that very often. And amongst all this, another guy came up. He's since moved over to Aussie, but he said, will you be my sponsor? I was like, oh, yeah, okay. So that happened. So I'm taking him through. And that's right. We looked through the New Zealand AA service manual. There were things in that that stood out. And then I remember me and a couple of other members, one quite a senior member, we went down to the assembly that they were having in Invercargill. And it was really nice. So for someone who just in a new town, just finding his feet in the fellowship in Dunedin, in relationship with my partner, we've been long distance for 3 years at that point. Now we're actually living together. And it was just, yeah, so... And here we are today.
That's amazing. That means you only came, when I came down here, I thought you were an old-timer Dunedinite. And you're only a year before me. So there you go. That just tells me how welcoming the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous can be. You know, and that. It's a society across the country, isn't it?
Oh, it is. I just wanted to put that out there, though, that Dunedin has been very welcoming as a fellowship. And, yeah, I felt very supported and at home. So, yeah, thanks, guys.
Nice. And so with regards to the sponsorship side of things, is it everything you thought it would be or is it more with your sponsor?
Yeah, well, because I didn't know what to expect, I guess there's no comparison really. But I've really enjoyed people that know stuff, you know, whether it's in my own personal skills set or they don't have to be necessarily older than me, just people that I could, like, well versed, know what they're talking about a little bit. So I kind of, maybe I love that sort of teacher student thing, you know. It's not that I'm a people pleaser. I'm definitely not that kind of person. But it's more, it's good and it moves around a bit and it's quite good. It's sometimes in, maybe every couple of days we text. It's not sort of heavy communication. And then even just the other day, small text about something, and I said, are you free this weekend? Because they often have other responsibilities during the weekend. So that's cool. Sunday is on. So that's good. We'll have a face-to-face meeting and go through a few things. I'm sort of moving between, like, steps, you know, 7, 8, and I'm around there, and I just want to, like, to just have that more cemented in terms of what that means. Yeah.
I love a way a sponsor works with you. Not at you. I love that. It's really, I'm so grateful for my sponsor. She always works with me and builds me up. She never throws me down. It's such an amazing thing to have somebody like that. I describe it as being loved back to wellness. You know, it's just someone else being kind to me and thoughtful. And, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I wasn't used to that. Or if I was getting it, I was ignoring it. But yeah, I find my sponsor to be such a kind, generous person, especially with their time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially, I mean, I wonder, because I was talking about this a few, maybe a couple of months ago, and it was just like the ratio of available woman sponsors, like even in Dunedin, because we all know that women drink, right? You know,
lots.
We lots. It's not like there's more, or you know, everyone has the potential, whatever
has
gender
a potential
actually, to be sort of having these serious issues in their life. So I was with my sponsor. I think you know they've got perhaps like sometimes 3 to 5.
It takes a lot of time.
It's a lot of time, and luckily they're retired. So that's it. Yeah, it's a commitment.
It is a big commitment.
Yeah,
I think there's a shout out to all the sponsors. I think you're pretty amazing for what you do and lead us down the road of recovery. We're very grateful. I'd like to remind our listeners that if you want to drink, that is your business. If you want to stop, well, that's the business we're in, and we've found a way that works. So come and visit an AA meeting, AA being Alcoholics Anonymous, if you fancy. You just need to get onto aa.org.nz, and that will give you a list. You just put in where you are and it'll give you a list of where the meetings are, what times in your area. We've also got a wonderful phone line, 0800 AA Works. That's 0800 229 6757. You'll get one of us, alcoholics, on the other line. It's one of the things Simon was talking about, service and getting in there. Well, that's one of the things that we do. We answer the 0800 AA Works line and we'll guide you to a meeting, sometimes even pick you up and take you to one. So please don't hesitate to call. And also, you can send us a letter or an email, let's say, to aa.live.radio@gmail.com. Please do write if you want to come on the show, share your experience, strength and hope. As a listener, you might be out there having those sort of experiences in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous yourself, or if you need some guidance to a meeting. You know, but as I say, aa.org.nz, that will be where you need to go. Online meetings, face-to-face meetings, open meetings where you can take a support person, closed meetings where it's just you drinkers. I'm looking at my two guests this evening. We're going to finish with a song this evening. I have just put in a bit of New Zealand music. I don't even know what number I'm going to put on. It's just going to, number 6, there you go. It's just going to play. But I want to say thank you both for coming in this evening and spending the evening with us. I'm sure our listeners have enjoyed hearing your words and your stories.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And until next time, stay safe out there. And remember, Alcoholics Anonymous, it does work if you work at it. Mate wā, everyone. Back and back.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.